Coming up, it's the Wednesday start on the PGA Tour. The final dance in Austin, Texas for the WGC Dell Technologies match play as 64 of the world's best are going head-to-head at Austin Country Club. Early highlights and scores ahead of the show. At first glance, it appears two vastly different opinions on the proposed rollback coming from two Ryder Cup teammates, Rory McIlroy and John Rahm. These guys coming from opposite ends of the spectrum, or as Eamon Lynch says, maybe it's closer than you would think. We're going to hear from these two major camps ahead. And this week, the backdrop for the PGA Tour, the live music capital of the world in Austin, Texas. A man very familiar with the Austin music scene will join the show, Lucas Nelson. Lucas, the son of Country Music Hall of Famer and golf course owner outside Austin, Willie Nelson. That's all coming your way next on Golf Today.
Golf Today.
And here we go. Game day on Golf Today, as it's the opening round of the WGC Dell Technologies match play, day number one. 64 of the top players in the world prepare to go head-to-head to determine the match play champion of 2023 in what is the only World Golf Championship event on the PGA Tour schedule this season. With that, hello and welcome inside our Golf Channel studios. This is Golf Today. I'm George Savarikas, sitting alongside Golf Week columnist Eamon Lynch. Eamon, the rare Wednesday that we get to talk birdies and bogeys here on Golf Today.
And I'm going to miss this day because opening day of the match play, even I preferred it, I think, a little bit more when it was the winner-go-home scenario a few years ago. But we're going to get this for the next 3 days, actually, today through Friday, yep, of these toe-to-toe matches with the best players in the world. That's something you really don't get outside of a Ryder Cup and a President's Cup here. It's going to be sad to see it go when it happens.
It is one of my favorite days of the year, one of my favorite weeks of the year. I'm a big match play junkie. You don't see enough of it in the professional ranks. You see a lot of it in the amateur ranks. Totally agree with you, back in the day when it was just single elimination knockout, Wednesday was one of the best days of the year on the PGA Tour schedule. The issue was then going into the weekend, you'd let the air out of the balloon and it would totally deflate. With the round robin format that you have group play Wednesday through Friday, you know that you're going to see the stars and the big names at least for 3 days. And for a lot of these guys, Eamon, that'll be critical because this could be their last start before Augusta.
It really is a tune-up for a lot of these guys. It's the last port before they head to Augusta. And you're right, it's this balance between what's the fan-friendly product, yep, where you're going to keep fan interest, keep the bigger names around, balancing that against kind of the competitive pureness of match play has always been a tough one. It's probably a fair solution here for the last few years. I still preferred it when they had to win on Wednesday or buy their plane ticket home.
Oh, you liked chaos and anarchy day one.
Absolutely.
Very unlike you. Let's look at the format for those unfamiliar with where it stands right now with the WGC Dell Technologies match play group play. So we have 32 matches on the course at Austin Country Club Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Then in Eamon's mind, the real fun begins Saturday morning. Single elimination. We have 16 cut down to 8 with the quarterfinals Saturday afternoon. The semifinals Sunday morning, 4 players, 2 matches. And then the championship showdown is Sunday afternoon.
The group that a lot of folks have their eyes on today is Group 2. John Rahm, Ricky Fowler, Billy Horschel, a former champion, and Keith Mitchell. This is the first time we're seeing Rahm since his WD at the Players' Championship with a stomach bug. Any update on what's going on with the world number two this week?
Well, he came into the media center yesterday, and he really didn't want to talk too much about that stomach issue that he had at Ponte Vedra Beach in the second round of the Players that forced him to withdraw from the championship. But he did say it was a quick recovery, and he was back at it, practicing, getting ready for this championship fairly quickly. Now, he will be taking on Ricky Fowler today, two of the most popular players out here on the PGA Tour. Ricky's stock is rising. He is trending, but John is playing so beautifully right now. John said in his press conference yesterday how much he enjoys going mano a mano in this championship as kind of a breath of fresh air away from stroke play.
It is really the only time throughout the year, besides maybe the Ryder Cup, where you're playing truly against the person in front of you. Right, which is much more relatable to every other sport we play in the world, right? Which is basically about just playing better than the team in front. Usually it's very much about you minding your own business and hopefully beating the other 150 players on the field. So It's fun. It's a lot more aggressive. You see more birdies. You see a lot of things happen. And again, one of the things you mentioned, when you have a lot of matches out there, you see a ton of highlights and a ton of great things happening. When you only have one or two on the course, I can understand why you get, you know, it can be a little bit hard to as a product. So I wouldn't know how to sell it. I honestly can't tell you. I can tell you why I love it so much.
Of course, Jon Rahm is a self-motivated, great player on the PGA Tour. Ricky Fowler, as I mentioned, has been trending so far in 2023. He needs to make it to the quarterfinals here in this championship to finish inside the top 50 in the Fisher World Golf Ranking on Monday, which would get him an invite to the Masters. So plenty to play for Ricky Fowler as well. This is one of those days, guys. It's a wonderful day at match play. You could come out and shoot 73 and win. And sometimes you could shoot 63 and lose. So it's going to be an exciting morning and afternoon here at Austin Country Club.
That's what makes it such a great week in the PGA Tour schedule, the finale at Austin Country Club. With Jon Rahm, it turns into such an immediacy bias of what have you done for me lately? Because right now he's the presumptive PGA Tour Player of the Year as the front runner, having won three times already on the schedule. But since we've gone to the Florida Swing, had that great first round at the Arnold Palmer Invitational with the 65, winds up, I believe, T39, and then the WD at the Players. What are you looking for out of Rahm today?
He's got a tough group here. He made, of all the top guys, Jon Rahm's got the toughest group to get out of here. And he does have something of a mixed record here. You know, he was runner-up to Dustin Johnson 2017 in the match play. Then a couple of years, he failed to make it out of group play at all. And the last couple of years, he's gone down to Brooks Koepka and Scottie Scheffler. But he's got a tough opponent in Billy Horschel is an interesting one. This is where you start this debate between form and format in this tournament. Billy Horschel hasn't finished better than tied 30th on the PGA Tour all year. He's playing, by his own admission on the show this week, fairly dreadful golf right now.
He told us that, yeah.
But he won here 2021, and last year he was unbeaten in group play, and he lost narrowly. It was the toughest match Scottie Scheffler played all of last year in the match play, was to beat him one up. So that's a tough opponent that Rahm's got to face this week. His match today against Ricky Fowler is an interesting one. Ricky's the sentimental story this week, the idea of trying to play his way back into form, make that invite list for Augusta National. But Ricky hasn't played this tournament in 7 years, back since 2016. He was in the semifinals. He finished third in the won the kind of runner-up match or the third place match back in 2014. So he does have some record in match play, but most of that actually dates back in terms of quality victories to his amateur days. It's been a long stretch since Ricky found himself going toe-to-toe with anyone in this format.
Yeah, if you look at what Jon Rahm has done historically with match play, which you had touched on, a lot of that was prior to Jon Rahm ascending to now world number one, world number two, being on that short list, that trio with Scottie Scheffler, Jon Rahm, and Rory McIlroy, where they've clearly separated themselves from the rest of the PGA Tour at this stage of the season. So I would think it's a slightly different version of Jon Rahm than we're seeing, say, 4, 5, 6 years ago with how consistent he's been. I would take the Florida Swing as more of an outlier than an indictment of the current state of his game.
And he traditionally has not played particularly strongly on the Florida Swing throughout his career. He's been much more of a West Coast guy.
And he's never, like, played much on the Florida Swing.
Exactly. He's not showing up there a lot. He didn't really have a lot of options this time around, given the sort of frequency of the elevated events where he found himself in there. But let's not overlook old Cashmere Keith Mitchell in here as well. I mean, he could be the one who disrupts everything. He hasn't played exceptionally well this year, but his results have been very, very solid through the season as well. He's unspectacular, but solid. That's often a good recipe for match play.
I'm excited to see him, and I do think match play brings out the best version of Billy Horschel from an emotion standpoint. I think he's one to elevate his game, especially when it's mano-a-mano. It seems like that's where Billy really thrives.
You think there'll be a little fire when he's going up against Jon Rahm?
That'd be a spectacular watch for sure. So the model local rule, obviously Golf World's been buzzing about this over the last week plus. This was a proposal from the USGA and the RNA that the model local rule requiring use of golf balls tested under modified launch conditions to address hitting distance. This model local rule, only intended for use in elite competitions, specifically the men's game, would be available starting January 1st, 2026. Conforming golf balls under this model local rule must not exceed overall distance standard limit, 317 yards at 127 mile an hour club head speed. So this coming from Rory McIlroy in an interview with No Laying Up. He said, I'm glad in this new proposal that they haven't touched the recreational golfer. But for elite level play, I really like it. I really do. I know that's a really unpopular opinion amongst my peers, but I think it's going to help identify who the best players are a bit easier, especially in this era of parity that we've been living in these past couple of decades. I think you're going to see people with more well-rounded games succeed easier than what the game has become, which is a bit bombing gouge over these last few years. Honestly, for me, the major championships are the biggest deal, so if the PGA Tour doesn't implement it, I might still play the model local rule ball because I know that'll give me the best chance and the best preparation leading into the major championships. Here's what John Rahm had to say.
I mean, it's discussed. I think people want to know where everybody's at. I haven't talked to anybody in the USGA to understand as to why they're so focused on testing all our equipment. Whether it's the driver or the ball, whatever it is, they're hyper-focused on making professional golf a little bit more difficult than it already is. I don't know why. Do I think it's the right choice? As it comes to me, I don't think it's going to matter that much. I think if you were to roll the ball back, it's going to be more damaging to the shorter hitters on tour than it is for people that have distance, right? Because if you're giving me a 7-iron as opposed to a 9 or an 8-iron, that means you're giving somebody a 4 or a 5 as opposed to a 7 or a 6. So I'm still going to be able to stop it in most places with a 7-iron when some people might not, especially if we're talking about missing fairways right now. You're putting those players in a tougher situation. And with that said, you know, all this 520-yard par 4 tee boxes they love to do nowadays are not going to be able to be used. So at the end of the day, they're still going to be playing the same game. My biggest question for them would be, we're in a golden era of golf where it's exploded since COVID. A lot of people are watching. You have a completely different tour. All these great things are happening for the game and it's growing. Why change what's working? I mean, try to make it better by making it better, not, right? There's plenty of things you can do to make it more difficult for us. Golf course design, course setup, all these great things, right? Courses like last week at Innisbrook, it's not long, and the score still held up. Colonial, for the most part, unless it's, you know, a very benign week with the wind, scores are always higher than the average. Hilton Head, same thing. Valderrama, same thing. You can neglect a lot of nowadays distance with different golf course design, right? If they keep making, I think you can go with, as it comes to the USGA, Oakmont, Erin Hills, Shinnecock, Wingfoot at Torrey Pines, probably the five longest US Opens you've seen. Who do you think is going to win? And all of them were under par. You think about Marion, which is one of the shortest and was one with one over par, right? So I think there's other things that can be done that change in the technology of the game to make it more challenging for us. That would be my suggestion to them. But we'll see, I guess, in 3 years what happens. I don't think we're going to get to a point to where we only play both opens with a different golf ball. I mean, that would be a little bit silly. So it's going to be an all-out change or no change at all. That would be my guess, but who knows?
Your takeaway from what we heard from, obviously, the quotes from Rory McIlroy and then John Rahm in his press conference.
Well, I think John Rahm needs to draw a distinction between, he's looking at the PGA Tour product. The USGA and the RNA are not looking at the PGA Tour product in terms of what the excitement value is. They seem to have a different range of measurements. And John said he hasn't actually talked to anyone at the USGA yet to see exactly what their reasoning is. There was a similar issue, I guess, with the World Golf Rankings a few months ago whenever John finally sat down and talked to the rankings people. He came away with a different viewpoint. But his position and Rory McIlroy's aren't different when you drill down to the reality of this, which isn't what people think now in this blowback phase of the proceedings. It's what the reality is going to look like, potentially 2026.
So you're saying implementation-wise, they're not too far apart?
They're not, because John Rahm's line there was, he said, it's going to be all-in change or no change. John doesn't see a scenario where just two opens happen to have a rolled-back golf ball. And that's unlikely to be the scenario anyway, because Fred Ridley, the chairman of Augusta National, has suggested, even if you go back to his press statements last year at the Masters, he's very clearly in support of action being taken on the ball. So the likelihood is the Masters would row in behind the two governing bodies. The PGA Championship already perceives itself as being the runt of the litter when it comes to major championships. They are not going to further sort of reduce themselves in that club at all. They're going to go with the other major championships. And as Rory pointed out in the No Laying Up interview, the PGA Tour has always had this perception that the majors are deemed to be here when it comes to competitive excellence, and the Tour is a notch below them, and the Tour chafes at that. Does the Tour want that perception to grow? I don't think they do. And you have this choice. Are you going to be trying to be up there with Michael Jordan's Bulls, or are you going to be the Harlem Globetrotters? Are you going to be entertainment? Are you going to be the long ball all the time? And these kind of perceptions and politics, I think, are going to play out over the next couple of years. So when Rahm and Rory say the likelihood that they could end up playing this ball several years down the road, they're pretty much arriving at the same likelihood of what they're going to do. It's a little odd that Rory, I think, says he might play it year-round rather than just change it for the major.
I find that hard to believe.
I would question whether or not that would happen too, but it does tell you where his emphasis is on trying to prepare for what he believes will be four majors playing that golf ball and where he puts his emphasis in terms of legacy.
When you look historically, obviously there was the smaller ball for the Open in a period of time compared to what we played over here in the U.S. I think it's borderline implausible that we would see a scenario where the majors had one type of golf ball and then the PGA Tour had another. I think that the two sides aren't as far apart as it may appear initially, and that ultimately they're going to lead to some type of compromise. I did think it was interesting that Jon Rahm harkens to a popular trope among players is course setup and course design. And if that has a greater emphasis placed on it, that you wouldn't necessarily need these other offsets from an equipment standpoint to slow down the evolution of the game off the tee. I don't know that that's a one-size-fits-all type solution. It seems like it's more piecemeal where for certain courses that could work, but I feel like the cat's already out of the bag. Like we're too far down the road to say, oh, all courses now need to have uniformity when it comes to course design to try and stymie the substantial gains that have been made from a distance standpoint. I mean, you look at just Rory McIlroy, his driving distance on the PGA Tour, he's been like first or second the last 4 years. In his career, dating back for the last decade, he's been among the top 10. 8 years ago, he was averaging 308.9 off the tee. He's at 326 plus right now. In 8 to 9 years, he's had 18 yards off the tee. That is a massive jump for one of the longest hitters in the game.
Yeah, and you're right. This idea that course design alone can fix this issue is just not a sustainable theory. It's also not a portable theory. You can't move it from one course to another. And Jon Rahm cited several golf courses there that have hosted major championships that were long. He talks about the winning scores. Some old designs do hold up. Oakmont, I think, holds up. He cited Merion. Merion was close to having windmills on the greens back in that 2013 Open. I mean, the pins were cut so close to the edges. The fairways were narrowed to the point of almost being laughable. And that was to stop Merion being embarrassed as a venue. The old course had tees on the Himalayas putting course. It had tees on the driving range. It had tees on the new course. And it had tees on the ball golf course. So the idea that these courses aren't being rendered obsolete by distance is laughable. They are. Now, John can cite the courses that have held up, but ultimately major championship golf has to test something more than hitting the ball straight. And that's ultimately what you're getting into. When you go down that road of let's grow the rough, you are simply talking about it being a test of a very non-nuanced question, which is can you hit the ball straight? It should be more than that.
Welcome back. Today, March 22nd, marks World Water Day, held every year since 1993. This day celebrates water and raises awareness of the 2 billion people living without access to safe water. In the golf industry, climate change and water scarcity present serious threats to courses and green spaces in the U.S. and around the world. Over the next 15 years, the USGA will invest $30 million to provide solutions that courses can use to economically reduce their use of water by as much as 45%. Here are the 9 key actions for conservation from the USGA. Install and manage drip irrigation, introduced drought-resilient grassing strategies, used non-potable water, precision irrigation strategies, irrigation system maintenance, chemical mitigation, surface water strategy, as long as turf quality. With that, let's welcome in Matt Pringle, Managing Director of the USGA Green Section, to the show. Matt, World Water Day, an opportunity to talk about how golf uses water. Recent studies show that we've reduced by 29% the last 20 years water usage. Can you tell us about how the USGA has contributed to that reduction?
Sure. Good morning, guys, and happy Water Day to you. The USGA has been at this sustainability game and at this water conservation game for over 100 years. But I will say the 29%, I think we are one leg of a three-legged stool. Working with our industry partners, the companies that make the equipment that goes into the ground to deliver the water, and most importantly, working with our superintendent friends all around the country. Together, this industry has been phenomenal about reducing the amount of water we use to support the game while continuing to deliver the great turf conditions that golfers expect.
Matt, how does this fit in with the whole broader sustainability argument? We heard the USGA raise that last week in terms of the potential rollback of the golf ball as well. How does this all piece together in terms of this sustainability argument?
Well, I head up our green section, and we were founded over 100 years ago in 1920 with the express purpose of helping golf courses deliver the kind of conditions and experiences that our golfers really want and value, because that's where sustainability of our industry begins. I mean, it's super easy to play golf without any water at all. We just would do it on dirt. But I don't think that makes for a great experience. Our golfers don't think that makes for a great experience. And so we've been really focused for this entire time about how do we deliver those conditions with the least amount of resources possible. And clearly, water is one of those most critical resources, especially in certain parts of our country and around the world. And I think it fits into the larger context of, for example, the MLR proposal that was unveiled last week, because I'll give you an example. We think absolutely the first line, the most direct line between conserving water on golf courses is to reduce the amount of turf that we irrigate. And so when we think about the growth of courses over time, that's instrumental in thinking about the overall resources that we're using to support the game.
Matt, I'm curious, you see in the UK and outside the US, a lot of courses that will have some brown to them, and that can be a healthy golf
sure.
course. The American ideal with a lot of golf courses is a very lush green. With conservation now being more at the forefront from a sustainability standpoint, can brown also be beautiful here in the U.S. on golf courses?
Sure. It can. And the great part about our sport is, there's over 30,000 golf courses around the country. And, I happen to be a hockey player, so most hockey rinks are about the same size. But our golf courses are, variable all around the world in terms of the size, in terms of the features, in terms of the architectural aesthetic, including the turf species and conditions that we offer and experience. And we're not really we don't think it's a great model for us to sort of prescribe that golf courses should be brown and that represents the ideal. We think that golfers should be honest about what they'd like and expect and communicate that to their superintendent and to their club. And then our job and the industry's job is to help deliver those experiences with as little resources as possible. And I think overall that makes for a much more sustainable sport and one that we can deliver than us sort of preaching and prescribing that brown is the new green. That's not the best way for us to help.
Matt, I think it's great what you guys are doing from a messaging standpoint to push this to the forefront and raising awareness, not just here in the U.S., but obviously outside the U.S. as well with the game of golf. Appreciate the time.
Great. And invest. We're investing a lot of dollars in this, not just talking about it. We're investing a lot of dollars, and we're excited. We think it's a great way that the USGA can help support the game that we all love.
It was such a close call for Jordan Spieth last week at the Valspar Championship. He standout at the University of Texas, helped the Longhorns win a national title back in 2012, putting in some early work, Eamon. And he has a tee off for another 2 hours from now against Mackenzie Hughes.
Well, it's a hometown game almost for him, at least from his college days. Doesn't live too far away right now in Dallas.
Spieth looking for his first win this season on the PGA Tour. From one Longhorn to another. Speaking of the University of Texas, Agat Lenny played collegiately for the Longhorns women's team. Lenny won the Big 12 championship in 2019, was an All-American that same year.
Earlier this month, Agat won on the Epson Tour for the first time at Florida's Natural Charity Classic at the Country Club of Winter Haven. She shot a bogey-free 66 in the final round and survived a playoff. With the win, Agat earned $30,000 and sits in third place in official money. And here are some of the career highlights. Former Texas Longhorn, 2019 Big 12 Player of the Year and All-American, 2019 played the Augusta National Women's Amateur. He's also been on the Arnold Palmer Cup International Team Member, European Ladies Amateur Champion in 2017, and won the Epson Tours 2023 Florida Natural Charity Classic, as we just noted. We're pleased now to be joined by Agat Lenny. Agat, congratulations on the win. You came from pretty far back, six shots, shot a bogey-free final round, won the playoff. At any point during that process, did you let your mind wander to how important that victory would be at this early stage of your career, or how did you manage to keep focused on the job at hand?
No, I really didn't wonder. I was just trying to play my best, and it was really sweet to get that early win out of the season 2023.
And, I mean, banking that early win, how does that change the year for you?
It's still a grind. I just have a long season still, so it puts me in position for sure, but I still have a long way to go till the end of the season for sure.
I got you. Obviously, had a pretty decorated amateur career, and you're having success early in your professional career. How is your patience level maintained itself during that time? Did you expect success on the professional level to come earlier than it has, or are you happy with the trajectory you're on now?
I mean, you always want it early, as soon as you turn pro. So last year was a little difficult on the LPGA. I missed a lot of cuts. So I'm happy for my decision to play on Epson Tour and win early for sure.
What did you learn most about yourself last year on the LPGA Tour?
Just work hard and be patient and keep that confidence in. Even though you miss cuts, it's going to turn your way at some point.
So our Todd Lewis is a reporter this week at the WGC Dell Technologies Match Play. I always love giving him restaurant recommendations. If you had to tell him one place to go this week in Austin, what would it be?
I liked Eddie's V. It's a steakhouse downtown Austin. They have really good steak, and I love steak, so I would go there anytime.
Eamon, I think Todd's going to have to get the corporate card out and enjoy a nice steak this
week. You mean Todd actually pays
when he goes out? At the WGC.
I've never seen that.
Yeah, it would be a novel concept. T. Lou, one of the best in the business. Agat, thanks so much for the time.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, sticking with the women's game, the best in the world are back in action this week with the LPGA Trivon Championship. LPGA returning to Superstition Mountain for the first time since 2008, to Arizona for the first time since 2019, with the first full field event of the 2023 season. The notables in the field. And if you look at some of the notable names, Brooke Henderson, already a winner this season, can say the same for Jin Young Ko, Jennifer Kupcho in the mix, Danielle Kang. We mentioned Minwoo Lee earlier, his sister Minji Lee also in the fold.
Let's take a look at who's in the race to the CME Globe. Still pretty early going in the LPGA Tour season. But Nelly Korda on top of that list, tied with Jin Young Ko. There's a rivalry we all want to see in this game. And it's a pretty competitive 10, all the way down to Danielle Kang, currently in 10th spot.
Round one of the WGC Dell Technologies Match Play.
Well, Nick Gabrielczyk is currently a junior at the University of North Florida with 7 collegiate victories and is currently the 12th ranked player in the World Amateur Golf Rankings. 2021, he won the Phil Mickelson Award as the nation's most outstanding freshman player. Nick is a native of Trinity, Florida, which is about 20 minutes from the Innisbrook Golf Resort, which hosted last week's Valspar Championship on the PGA Tour. As a child, he spent time as a volunteer at the Valspar, manning the practice area during tournament week and working as a standard bearer.
Last week, Nick made his PGA Tour debut at the Valspar Championship, teeing it up on a sponsor invite with his older brother, Donnie, a local club pro, carrying the bag for him. Nick had opened with a 75, but turned it around with a 4-under 67 to make the cut into the weekend.
It's an awesome feeling, making my first cut. It's going to be unforgettable. I think my dad could arguably be having more fun than I am with all of this, the experience being inside the ropes, but it's just a blast having everybody here.
Really cool video, and we now welcome in University of North Florida junior Nick Gabrielczyk. Nick, you caught the attention of a lot of people in the golf world last week with that second round 67 to make the cut at the Valspar Championship. Now that we're a few days removed from the tournament, what's the best memory from last week?
Just how many people came out to support, friends, family, people that I haven't seen in 4 or 5 years, just seeing how many people care and just would travel and just come support me just meant the world. And I think that's what I'll look back to as my life goes on.
So, Nick, I assume it was worth sacrificing any kind of spring break partying with your buddies for the sake of playing a weekend on the PGA Tour?
Yes, it was definitely worth it, even though our team had 2 events that week, so I would have been playing golf regardless. But if I had to choose the Valspar or go into some parties, I definitely would have chosen the Valspar 100 times.
I heard the sponsor's invite was kind of 11th hour. How did that come to be?
Yeah, so there were some things that needed to happen at the players, and I left Jacksonville at around 4 o'clock just driving home. Didn't think I was going to get in, and then got the call at about 6:30 to 7 from Tracy, and she said, I hope you're on your way back because you're playing this week at the Valspar, and it was just the call I've been waiting to get for a very long time.
You opened with a 75 in the first round. What was your mindset going into the second round? Because a college junior who's well outside the cut line heading into Friday on a PGA Tour event probably doesn't have a lot of expectations of making the cut, but you shot 67 to earn your spot in the weekend. What was your attitude going into the day?
Yeah, me and my brother, we just talked about it. We were like, this is what you've been practicing, preparing for, and you know you're good enough to go out there. So we went out in the morning, had a good warm-up, and just said, let's just go give it all we have and see where it puts us at the end of the day. And started off hot, 4 birdies in the first 5 holes, and then we both looked at each other and we were like, let's just keep it going. And we know we can get a few more, but let's just hang on. And we're inside the cut line right now, so that was the goal going into the week. And I'm super happy that I performed in the second round and got it done.
You have a reputation as a closer and a winner at UNF. You've won 7 times in your college career. I loved your quote after your second round 67 about expectations. You said expectations are still to win. That's the mindset going into weeks where you tee it up. Do you think it was that mentality that helped carry you into a made cut in your PGA Tour debut?
Yes, just the mindset of going out there competing, always wanted to win. It's definitely helped me throughout my college career and this past week. It's just how I am. I like winning more than anything, and just having that mindset just drove me to play well and ultimately led me to make the cut.
And Nick, since you're a junior, you're not listed in the PGA Tour University rankings, but it is a 2-year ranking system. So whenever you do appear on it, you're probably going to be ranked pretty high on that. Do you look upon that as your best pathway to the PGA Tour going forward?
Yes, just PGA Tour is an unbelievable system for collegiate golfers, just giving you a place to play right out of college. Obviously, there's different tiers, Korn Ferry, PGA Tour Canada, and now getting straight to your tour card. But But just having the security of a place to play right out of college means everything to us and just adds extra motivation to practice and keep getting better to ultimately get to our end goal of being on the PGA Tour.
Nick, before we say goodbye, one last quick question. Was there a cool text or call that you got after last week at the Valspar Championship?
Joel Damon DM'd me on Instagram saying this is an awesome story and he's like, congrats on everything and he looks forward to watching the rest of the week and my career going forward. So that was pretty cool to see.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's nice to see when game recognizes game as part of the future here. Nick Gabrielczyk making his cut in his PGA Tour debut. Great chatting with you.
Thank you for having me.
So, Nick, someone we may see on the PGA Tour University rankings in the future. Let's take a look at them currently. Ludvig Åberg, the Texas Tech stud. He's been hunkered down in that top spot basically all season. Sam Bennett, reigning U.S. amateur champ, Texas A&M, clocking in at fourth as we go to 11 through 20. Some of the names on that list, it is Ryan Burnett, North Carolina, who is rounding out the top 20 currently. Austin, Texas, known for its music scene. Coming up next, the son of a country music Hall of Famer and the lead singer of the band Promise the Real, Lucas Nelson, is going to join the show. He's pretty good with the guitar and not too bad with his sticks as well. That's next. Some news on Monday. Webb Simpson announcing he's parting ways with longtime caddy Paul Tesori. Tesori was on the bag for all of Simpson's 7 PGA Tour victories, including his lone major back in the 2012 U.S. Open and Olympic and the 2018 Players' Championship. Tesori, now the caddy for world number 17 and reigning PGA Tour Rookie of the Year Cameron Young. Webb Simpson releasing this statement in part after over 12 years of working together, Paul Tesori and I have made the hard decision to change directions. This was an incredibly difficult decision for both of us, but one that we have thoroughly considered after spending many hours in prayer, seeking counsel from mentors, and having countless conversations together. Not only has he been my caddy and swing coach, but one of my best friends in the world. I'm happy for the great opportunity Paul has in going to work with my fellow Demon Deacon and friend Cameron Young. Paulie, Michelle, Alexis, and Isaiah and their family will always be part of Team Simpson. Their family has become our family, and our family has become theirs. Austin, Texas, not only known for great match play courses like Austin Country Club, for its music scene, man, very familiar with the Austin music scene. Lucas Nelson, Lucas, the son of country music Hall of Famer Willie Nelson, currently lead singer and guitarist of the band Promise of the Real, which has a new record coming out today. And Lucas Nelson, also an avid golfer back in 2022, teamed up with Bo Osler, AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. That's where I met Lucas. The duo finished tied for 16th, carding consecutive rounds in the 60s, a low round of 63 and a 64 in the third round. So we know how big a music scene Austin, Texas has, the heartbeat of the city. Now let's welcome in country musician Lucas Nelson. Lucas, good to see you.
Good to see you too. How are you doing?
I'm good. I know you have a lot of roots with the Austin music scene, given your family connections there. PGA Tour's final stop in Austin. What makes it such a vibrant music city?
Well, I think a lot of people migrated there, left Nashville, left that scene, and came down to Austin. My father, Waylon Jennings, and they had what was called the Outlaw Movement, and that was back in the 60s, the 70s, and it really was what married, what became a marriage of the hippies and the cowboys, and they realized they had a lot in common after all. and it was, and so really Austin became a counterculture hub and gave birth to a lot of great music. Subsequently, Doug Somm was a fascinating character. Of course, Stevie Ray Vaughan was a character came out of there, and Jim. And so, well, actually, he came out of Dallas, but he was in the Austin scene. Lou Ann Barton. Anyways, there's a lot of music, a lot of great music comes from there.
Your dad moved there, I believe it was 1972, and then a little more than 10 years ago, there's now a statue of Willie Nelson in Austin. You see the family connection. Is it kind of amazing how things unfolded given the initial footprint there. You said it was kind of hippies and counterculture with this marriage with Cowboys. And now it's keep Austin weird is the mantra.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, there's a lot of great art and culture there. And it's a beautiful, beautiful just aesthetically. There's a lot of great nature there. It's a very green place for and it's got, you know, bubbling springs and rolling hills. It's quite a beautiful place. And so it's no surprise that a lot of people want to come down there. And yeah, you know, it's one of my favorite places. It's where I was born. I was born in Austin, kind of grew up all over the world, really. Hawaii and, you know, all these places.
Your dad owns a golf course there, Pedernales, a 9-hole course outside Austin. At what point did you start getting the golf bug? I know your dad's had it for a while.
Yeah, I started swinging the club when I was real little, and my dad was taking me out. And you know, I'm glad he did because it's something I can do. Oh, that's a terrible-looking thing right there. That looks great. yeah, I had a lot of fun, though, at that Pebble Pro-Am, you know. And you know, Bo Hostler is a heck of a talent, man. He's really good. And together we've made it into the cut both times, which is really exciting.
That's great. And what more can you tell us with Promise of the Real, the new album that's dropping today?
Yes. Well, so the album doesn't drop today. The announcement of the album today dropped. The album comes out July 14th. Okay. But we have a single that just came out today with Lainey Wilson. And Lainey Wilson is one of the great artists. She's so good. She sounds so good. And we got a fun song called More Than Friends out right now. And it's a song that we did together. We did a video for it. So it's very fun. That comes out today. Yeah.
All right, Lucas Nelson, thanks so much.
Hey, thank you.